All right, so last session here before lunch, we have four gentlemen here from Major League Baseball who are going to walk us through StatCast and really give us both a retrospective now that we're getting into year five and a prospectus, really, on what's on the docket and some of the things that they've got working. So we are joined by Corey Schwartz, Greg Kane, Darren Willman, and Travis Peterson from Major League Baseball.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Thanks to everybody from Sabre for having us. Thanks to everybody for being here. Before I get to Greg, Darren, and Travis, I want to just sort of tell the origin story of StatCast, everything that sort of led up to the launch of that program and kind of set the stage for where we're trying to go going forward. I started out with MLB.com back in 2001, the company that was then known as MLB Advanced Media, which was the technology arm of baseball. And technology at that point really meant website. Within the first month of when I started there, we started to talk about how we could use tracking technology to enhance the website, to create products that fans would find interesting. But we were really only thinking about the pitch, and we were thinking about the website only. We weren't thinking about mobile devices because they really didn't exist to the extent they did now. We weren't thinking about broadcast or anything of that nature. That all changed in October of 2001 with the Derek Jeter backhand flip play in the playoff game at Oakland that some of you may remember. That was on a Saturday night, and when we came back to the office on Monday, our world had changed. We couldn't just do pitch tracking. It had to be full field tracking of every player. We didn't want to just know what had happened. We wanted to know why it happened, what enabled this unusual black swan type of play to happen that we'd never seen before. Did it have to do with whether it was Shane Spencer in right field instead of Paul O'Neill, or the fact that Spencer overthrew both of his cutoff men, or that the fact that Eric Burns didn't pinch run for Jeremy Giambi and that Giambi ran standing up instead of sliding? How did we get that particular outcome? So that was 2001, where we were thinking about that right away. But it wasn't until 2006 where we were able to do anything. We were able to launch our first basic implementation of pitch tracking. That went league-wide in 2008, and then finally we were able to launch the first limited run of what became StatCast in 2014, and that, of course, went league-wide in 2017 with all those public-facing products. So that really shows it took a very long time from when we decided we wanted to do this to when we were able to actually start doing it. So I'm going to cue up Greg here. From a technology standpoint, what were some of the challenges that we had to overcome? What were some of the things that had to happen for us to get to that point where we could finally start doing this technology?
Sure. So, I mean, the first thing we needed to do was build a team that was dedicated to this type of work. We had, you know, a smattering of different developers working on the data sources and data services that we were providing to clubs and for other purposes. But we didn't have a team specifically dedicated to the baseball data space. So between myself, Rob Engel, a handful of others, we started pulling together a team specifically with StatCast in mind because we knew we needed to level up what we were doing with how we were delivering data, but also how we could process, handle it, and all of those different things. So, you know, going back to 2014, what we were really running in StatCast was a soccer system tracking players and just the TrackMan system independently of each other. And then over the course of 2014, leading to that 2015 season, we built a combined baseball system that was brand new, that had never been done, and bespoke to what requirements that we provided to them. So that was a mad scramble leading up to 2015. But building out that team was the key element. I mean, at that time, I had about 9 developers on the team. Now it's over 40, and that's not including, you know, folks like Darren and others within the company. But that was really the first and foremost the thing we needed to do, get enough staffing and focus on the baseball elements. So, you know, we launched at the beginning of 2015, and by part of my team was working on other things with the BAMTech components that I'm sure many of you have heard, but, you know, getting the time and focused on the baseball system to get it to a good place was one of the key things that we had to do.
Yeah, so you mentioned the need to bring in the right people, so let's talk about Darren and Travis now. You know, you guys weren't at baseball at the launch of StatCast. What did you see as interested observers? You know, Darren developing websites and Travis in the academic world. What did you see that intrigued you and sort of put you on the path to where you are now, and what did you think you could bring to it from a technology standpoint?
Yeah, so basically, you know, I started Baseball Savant, I think, in 2012. At the time, I was working at the Harris County District Attorney's Office in Houston, and I was basically doing exactly what I do at MLB, but for criminal history data. So it was almost like criminal history savant. So you could like search people and like, you know, they had essentially player pages for all the crimes they committed. And so, I mean, I took what I was doing at the DA's office, and I stumbled across, I remember I was watching an Astros spring training game, and it was probably 2012, and they had all this pitch data, and I was like, where's this pitch data coming from? Like, can I get my hands on that? And so I downloaded the mobile app, I ran like a packet sniffer on it, and I was like, oh, this is where it's going to this this data source. And so I pulled it up in my browser and I saw all this data. So I was like, okay, let me write something to scrape all this data and I'll figure out what I can do with it later. And so I remember like getting all this data and sitting around at my house. I think my wife was pregnant at the time. And so I came up with the idea, like, let's just make this very searchable for other people, because I think people would really like to know, like, who throws the most 95 mile an hour fastballs? That interested me. And from there, like, let's see if we can link up the videos, because I know MLB's got videos. So I started linking videos to it, and it just kind of organically grew. And at the time, I started a Twitter account, I think, and I started, like, tweeting out the links to, like, Jeff Sullivan was one of the big users of Savant at the beginning, and he would start linking it to Fangraphs. And it just kind of, like, grew beyond my wild expectations. And MLB approached me, and it took a while because my DA's office job was really good. But when they said, we're bringing you on for StatCast, I was like, okay. I was super excited. And so, yeah, that was a very long answer for
I teach a class on sports analytics, and I started in 2016, so right around the same time that this is all coming out. And I can say that it's really fun to develop a course structure when new stuff is coming out every week, and it's really fun to engage the students. The students are really kind of latching on to all the really cool tracking stuff because they can see it, and it's really kind of that next generation of analysis, not just in baseball, but across different sports as tracking kind of permeates the different sports. I'll also add that, you know, this kind of explosion of data is happening in every single industry. I worked at IBM as a data scientist for a couple years before joining this team. And really, I think teaching students these skills is very important. I think just having this data set is a really fun way to get people involved in analysis and teach those skills.
You know, we'd like to think that when we launched StatCast, it was going to be great and take over the world. And it didn't turn out to be that way. We stumbled quite a bit, and I think, you know, we had to be honest with ourselves about that and honest with the world. You know, what were some of the things that you guys thought didn't work as well right away, and what were some of the challenges that we had to figure out? You know, you mentioned the staffing, but, you know, obviously we brought in a lot of people who are in this room right now who are really big additions to the team, but there were problems with the metrics, with the way we were, you know, handling the data, QA, all that kind of stuff. I mean, what were some of the initial challenges that you thought were the most important things?
Like one of the key things, and I think this was a little bit later after the beginning, was really understanding that what the field of play is. Now, we know that the bases are supposed to be 90 feet apart, but how far they really are they apart? And understanding the nuance and details of the field of play, specifically when you're tracking and the level of accuracy that we need to have, especially for, you know, front edge of plate and just the strike zone specifically. Understanding all these components and the nuances that, you know, how that it might affect the resulting data was something that we were maybe a bit naive about in the beginning, but over the course of the last year, we hired Clay Nunnally, baseball scientist. He's got a presentation later to talk about some of the ground truth testing work that we've done. But there was a game during the 2017 World Series that I think it was game two. There was a home run that was hit to left field, and the ball was tracked 97% of the way. The distance on the wall said, I believe, 380, but we tracked the ball 378. And I looked at the data, and everybody was, you know, pinging me during that time, obviously during the World Series. And we looked at it. We kept looking at it. And I'm like, I do not understand. This is right. The 378 is a good, valid number. Then we started looking into it, and we ended up getting a Leica laser range finder to take with us to Houston for the next three games, started measuring all the distances on the wall. When we got back to Houston, I'm sorry, back to LA, we did the same measurement, and it turned out that that panel had been put in the wrong position. So that kind of opened our mind, like, okay, what else is out there that we're assuming that isn't correct? And so we then started doing LIDAR scans. We had a LIDAR scan here at Salt River, and that kind of blew our mind, kind of seeing what's there, the amount of data that you can get out of it, going across the league and just kind of working with the grounds crews to say, hey, this component is out of position. Working with the umpires union to talk through ground rules and how those things might change over time as well. So like this is kind of opening our minds to all these components. So again, long-winded answer.
But yeah, we found out things that you just don't think about as a fan. For example, the fields are generally crowned, which means they're a little bit higher in the middle, sort of somewhere behind second place and second base and shallow center, and then they're a little bit lower on the base paths. So if you're measuring a player in three dimensions, are 0-0-0, meaning where they're standing was actually in some cases being measured underground because we assumed the field was completely flat. And we were like, wait a second, this guy's 6 feet tall. How come his center of mass is a foot and a half off the ground? Because we had his feet being underground at 0-0-0. So we had to sort of learn how to marry up the data we were getting with, the reality of what happens on a baseball field. Right. And there wasn't really anything to test against. If you're looking at event data, whether the player hit a home run or grounded out, you can just go watch the video and know exactly what happened. If we say a player is standing at a certain point or running at a certain speed or whatever it may be, what do you test that against? We had to figure those things out. How about from your guys' perspective down there?
Yeah, I would say like one of the things initially, especially that Mike Petriello alluded to earlier this morning was like context. Like all these stats are new. So especially initially, like is 100 miles an hour off the bat, is that good? Things like that. So we were rolling out a bunch of new stuff, which was really cool, but we were having a really difficult time contextualizing it, explaining to the fans, like, what does this mean? And I think we're learning that as we're going. We're still not awesome at it, but we're trying to get better, and I think that was definitely one. Another thing that I would say is extremely difficult, and we're still having a tough time with it, is naming these stats. It sounds like it should be easy, but you would be surprised how often that we sit around trying to think of the names for these stats. Like one that we're kicking around right now is jump. We think that's pretty intuitive. It's an outfielder. It's a baseball terminology. Like he gets a good jump on the ball, so we're pretty happy with that one. But like it's hard to explain to an average fan. Expected weighted on base average. So things like that were pretty difficult, and are still challenging.
I just kind of have to echo what everyone else has said. I think the ground truth testing has been a really big help in a lot of things we've been working on.
Yeah, and some of these things also, we come at them from the perspective of, look, we're all baseball fans. That's what brought us here. And what are the things we wanted to understand? So, for example, I'm going to take the hit for this one, root efficiency, which you've probably all heard of, or route efficiency if you prefer. Intuitively, as baseball people, we understand that, the shortest distance between where you're starting and where the ball ends up, that's the best route to run. You want to run a straight line as much as you can, all things being equal. So we were like, great, this is a really easy thing to measure. We go from point A to point B, we measure the distance, and we, make it a percentage of 100. And that sounded like a great idea, and every root efficiency was coming up as 96, 97, 98. There was no spread, so it was impossible to tell what was good and what was bad. So early on, we sort of had to, sort of self-edit ourselves a little bit better, that a lot of these things look good on paper, but we had to back up and find the best way to put them out there into the world that made sense, as you said, to create context and make it clear what it is we were really trying to get at and what's a good measurement. So, I'll take the hit for root efficiency, but fortunately now Mike and Darren, you guys have something better in mind?
Well, but adding on to what you're saying, we're all baseball fans. We love baseball. And so what ends up happening is we have meetings and we're focusing on one thing. We'll say root efficiency. How can we make it better? And we'll bring up a play from the night before. It'll be like pop time or something like that. And we'll start talking about pop time. And then somebody else will bring something else up. So we sometimes run into like analysis paralysis. We start talking about one thing because we have so much data and we know we can do all this stuff, but we have to keep our priorities straight or we'll get nothing done because we are such baseball fans and it's tough to keep focused when we have all this data and we know we can do all this cool stuff, but it's a tough challenge, really, especially being baseball fans.
I call that concept the rabbit hole. Any conversation, it goes sideways almost every single time, and it it may not sound as hard as it is, but keeping the conversation, you know, where we're moving the ball forward is very, very difficult, especially with a lot of different voices in the room that are all baseball fans.
Yeah, so Travis, when you came in and started getting your hands dirty with the data, what did you find out right away that kind of surprised you about it? You know, myself and Greg, we were there sort of there from the beginning. You came in a little bit after the start. How did it look to you, you know, coming in from the outside? What sort of opened your eyes about it?
As far as, you know, data quality or new, like, exciting things?
All of the above will be fine.
I would say, for me, the most exciting thing was digging into the speed metrics. We spent quite a bit of time looking at speed, you know, coming up with names, obviously the difficulty in that, but kind of like the different components of speed. So looking at, like, Jose Altuve might be quicker off the line, but someone like Trey Turner has a really high top speed. Or a person that we all kind of have our own pet players, StatCast pet players. So I'm digging through all this data, and I see this guy, Harrison Bader, who played like a couple of games at the end of the year, and his scouting grade was like a 60 on his speed, but I kept seeing him like consistently running, you know, just as fast as like Buxton. I'm like, hey guys, have you heard of this guy? So that was a pretty fun one.
How about you, Darren?
Yeah, like, I mean, I played at outfield in college, so like I always wanted to just only work on outfield metrics. And so one of the interesting guys is Inciarte. We noticed that he's not the fastest outfielder by any means, but he's one of the best. And so why is that? And so going back to root efficiency, we're kind of working on a new metric like that I alluded to earlier, was called jump. And so it's basically taking all the components of a route, reaction, the actual route, and some other things, and we're able to break them down by components. And so, like, we noticed that Inciarte has an extremely fast reaction. He doesn't run the best routes, but that reaction is what makes him get to the ball quick. And then there's somebody like Mike Trout, who previous years hadn't been a very great outfielder. Last year he had gotten better. And we're like, why is that? So last year his reaction time wasn't great, but his route running was tremendous. So we're hoping to roll this out soon. It's going to be called Jump. And so things like that, I mean, I think those are, that's one of my big things.
I can just piggyback off that. It's kind of, we're starting to measure the things, right, that the scouts talk about, right? And then I think Mike Petriello had a quote from Trout saying that he was working on his jumps. And then we go and look at the data, and yes, he actually is improving his jumps.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to a point that gets discussed a lot at this conference and similar conferences of how do you make data useful for consumers, whether that's fans or clubs or whatever it may be. And I think one of the things we did right in the beginning was, you know, think about this from the perspective of baseball fans and what are the things that we would want to know about players as baseball fans. You know, who has the best jump, who is the fastest player, who hits the ball hardest. So way back in the beginning, probably in around 2013, 2014, we sat down and made this laundry list of tell us everything we would want to know about a center fielder. How strong his arm is, how accurate his arm is, his decision-making of throwing to the cutoff man or throwing through to bases. And we came up with this big laundry list of things, and the stumble that came out of that was trying to do everything all at once rather than being a little bit disciplined. So I think there's a good management lesson here, not just for baseball, of, you know, having discipline in execution rather than trying to do everything all the time. But then we had to go through and sort of test out each metric that we were coming up with one at a time and see if it made sense. So you mentioned pop time. I'm not going to tell the story, but I'm setting this up for Greg to tell the pop time story. Before you do, just a quick reminder, if anybody has questions, there are note cards in the back. Give those to Jeff, and he'll bring the questions up to us. I probably should have reminded people from the start. But talk about pop time a little bit.
Sure. So I call this the tale of the parable of pop time. It's kind of just a tale to describe how your intentions may, you know, you need to use the data to really make sure you're getting the spirit out of the data explain what you're getting. So anyways, the tale here is that when we initially defined pop time, we were saying it was when the ball crosses the plate to the time it gets to the second baseman or shortstop at second base, which is, you know, a good way to measure that as we saw it. And then as we implemented that, the actual way we implemented that, we started seeing these names that were popping to the top of the list. What were the names?
Hank Conger was coming up with the fastest pop times in baseball. And again, as all baseball fans, not to, you know, disparage Hank, he's not a good catcher. So. Catcher than I am, let's be fair.
So we were seeing these pop times, and we're saying, well, why are these numbers so low for various players? And so as we started looking into it, it was because the second baseman was stepping in front of the bag. You know, it was a poor throw, and so they were just, you know, kind of moving forward and just no play at second base. That was happening very frequently for certain players, and that was causing the issue. So, I mean, we're really trying to derive the skill of the catcher to receive the ball and then deliver it to second base. Accuracy is a different measure specifically, but so what we did instead is, you know, using the data, said, okay, well, how should we reinterpret this? So instead of when it was caught at second base, it was how fast does it take them to deliver it to a distance that is the equivalent of second base, regardless of accuracy. And that just kind of shows the skill of their exchange and the power of their delivery to throw the ball down range. So, you know, that highlighted, we really need to say, okay, we have good intentions going into this, but we need to go back and analyze every single outcome and say, is this right? Are we getting out of this what we expect, and is it the spirit of what we asked for originally? So in some of these cases, I believe that happened in August or so. And yeah. So we'd had this measure running for, 4 or 5 months, and it took us that amount of time to get enough data and then enough time to analyze that data to say, something's not right here, so let's dig into that and then figure out the actual way to measure.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about, you're an outfielder, Darren. We all have our pet players. Travis loves the Mariners and so forth. Like, the fun thing for me about StatCast has been, we'll run a top 10 list on some metric or another, and, nine of the names are the names we expected. We know Aaron Judge hits the ball really hard, and Stanton hits the ball really hard, and so forth. But every now and then we see these sort of random names popping up in the middle, like you mentioned Harrison Bader. Give me a few more examples of, people that surprised you or discoveries that surprised you about how players play generally and how specific guys play.
Going back to the Trout thing, he's a five-tool player, but why is that? That's what I think is really cool. Being able to look at that, he hits the ball hard. You can create profiles. I think one of the things we really want to do is create the five tools with StatCast, right? We have the speed, we have the arm, we have the bat's exit velocity for power, we have their contact, and we have their fielding now. So I think is going to be really cool, and we'll have the ability to do that. And so to also go along with that, what I think at the end of the day, we'll be able to say, this player is like a 99 rating, and why is he a 99 rating? You'll be able to click on that. So going back to war or something like that, it's very complex and it's hard to understand. And so the way we'll use StatCast is we'll say he's a 99. This is why. His sprint speed is X. His exit velocity is Y. And we'll be able to, at a very intuitive level, tell you why is this guy good and why is he bad.
You have some pet players?
Oh, pet players. put me on the spot. Billy Hamilton, yeah. I don't know.
Who was the guy, the Giants guy, the other day? He's pumping 100 miles an hour.
Oh, what was
those
his
are
name?
The fun ones.
We yeah, like when a guy pops up. Right, yeah. I forget his name. I was looking at, so Baseball Savant just recently added a real-time StatCast feed. If you go to the site, you can, at Spring Training, we only have one facility with StatCast at Salt River, and the Giants were playing there, and I saw this guy pop up, and he's throwing 102, and I'm like, so I'm pulling up his scouting report, and I'm looking at his scouting grades, and he's got a 70 grade fastball, and I'm like, what does it take to get an 80? he's throwing 102 miles an hour. Come on.
Yeah, the fun part about it for me was, when we started out in the beginning, looking at, for example, exit velocity, because that was one of the first things we could reliably measure. In that year, it was Trout, Miguel Cabrera, Stanton, all the guys we expected. And then towards the bottom of the list was Justin Bour, who all season long was maybe eighth or ninth in average exit velocity. And at the time, he was still a platoon player. The next year, the Marlins made him pretty much their everyday first baseman, and he hit 32 home runs. And I was like, wow, this is really instructive. It doesn't mean he's a great player, but it really shows that we can use this to measure a specific skill. The other thing also was, again, in 2014, just looking at exit velocity, we'd see these weird spikes in player performance. Ryan Zimmerman is one that jumps out in my mind. He was really sort of the first poster boy for the value of this data. his exit velocity just went down and down and down all year long. Eventually, he went on the DL. He had a foot problem, I believe. He came off the DL and was still hitting 219 into, you know, like early mid-August. But his exit velocity was just going straight up from that point forward. And I remember looking at that chart being like, wow, he's really making great contact. I think the results are going to follow. Not that it was some genius prediction. And I think over the last 6 weeks of the season, he hit 390 with 13 home runs or something like that. Even though when he first came off the DL, the production wasn't there, the exit velocity had rebounded. So that sort of opened our eyes a little bit to some degree, the predictive measure of the data, but also how the data speaks to specific skills, and maybe in the future will help us a little bit more with injury detection, injury prevention, you know, sort of the holy grail of sports.
Yeah, another guy that you just reminded me of when you said Ryan Zimmerman is like Alex Bregman. I think he's an interesting guy because he doesn't hit the ball all that hard. He doesn't barrel the ball up a lot, like as far as our barrel stat concerned, but he's really good. I think he's a guy that would be a good case study, like looking at why is he so good? Is he hitting the sweet spot a lot? It's just kind of interesting because he's not like at the top of our list, but he is one of the best players in MLB.
Yeah, and that's, you know, there's always this thing of every time we're able to answer one question, there are two more things we want to figure out. You know, we want to get more and more. Greg, what are some things as a fan that we're not getting from StatCast yet that you would like to see?
Let's see. Well, I mean, I think there's, you know, there are limitations to the system. That's just part of the way that it was initially. The scope of the initial work was not to be 100% complete coverage. That's really kind of been, we've been able to kind of work around that up to this point, but the consistency of the data on every single data point for every measurement that happens, like that's really where I want to see this go, get to 100% completeness across everything that we're doing in real time, in an automated way, so that we can start doing other things beyond that. So looking into, you know, helping Corey's organization with the scoring side of like automatically detecting that, you know, there's so many different ways that is handicapping us that we need to get that where we can really kind of do all the things that we're thinking about doing.
How about you, Travis? You're obsessed with speed. Are there new metrics or measurements that you'd like us to be working on that we haven't done yet?
I'm obsessed with speed, but I think the next thing I'm really looking forward to is kind of getting a little more beyond just the measurements, but starting to look at a little more on the strategy. So a thing that we rolled out last year in the playoffs was stolen base probability. And so we have a graphic that shows, based off of the runner's lead, you know, what's the likelihood that they'll successfully steal second. And so those are broadcasting components that can really make it a lot more fun for the fan, kind of following the game. You know, how far should the runner be off the bag before they try to steal?
There.
Infield defense. I mean, that's what everybody wants. Like, why are infielders good? There's a lot of issues with it. We're getting pretty close, hopefully this season. But like just as like an example of an issue, so like choppers, balls that are hit directly down, it's just an inherent problem with the system. Like the ball gets lost and we don't know what to do with it. But we do have some data associated with it. We have the exit velocity, we have the launch angle, we have the direction it went. So there's some assumptions that we can make to determine where that ball is going. So we're working on like a bounced ball model to like predict based off the metadata, like where did that ball go? And then, so that's been a huge problem with us working on an infield metric, but we're pretty close. So yeah, infielding would definitely be one.
I mean, for me, you know, you were talking about strategy. I think the mental aspect of the game is something we can start to extract a little bit from the data. Everything that happens on a field is a probability. There's a probability of getting a hit or making an out or being safe or whatever it may be. So if we look at what players do relative to the probabilities on different plays, we can start to understand a little bit who has the best comprehension of the game as well as their skills. So a term that we all as baseball fans hear beaten around a lot is so-and-so is a really smart base runner. Generally, that means they go first to third on singles to right. That's all it means. Well, what about when they don't advance? That might really be the smart play. What if, you know, sometimes a player doesn't do something and we don't see anything in the box score, we don't see anything in the play-by-play, and that might have turned out to be the right decision because if they had tried to advance and been thrown out, that obviously would have been a negative. So if we look at the probability of every play of the various outcomes and see how often players' performances and the things they did matched up with the probabilities, we can start to see who the smartest players are. Some players may have great skills, but they may throw to the wrong base. They may, you know, get thrown out on the bases more, whatever it may be. So we can start to understand the mental aspect a little bit with the physical performance data.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, another thing that I've always said is, like, we could come up with, like, a fundamental stat. Like, which players are the best at fundamentals? Like, backing up, like, a catcher, every time the ball, a ground ball hits the infield, they're supposed to back up first base. You know, a play at the plate, is the pitcher behind the catcher at home plate backing up? So I think there's things like that we could do. I don't know how much the players would like it, because you'd be able to, like, knock them for not having fundamentals. But I think that would be an interesting statistic that we could certainly do.
No more thoughts on that, guys? Okay, keep sending questions to Jeff if you've got them. I'm going to take one here, and this actually cues up what we should spend the last part of this talking about, is what's the next technology that we're going to use? You know, StatCast is really a living thing. What are some of the things we can do going forward utilizing the technology and what we have so far?
So we're currently working with the next-gen system, trying to figure out what that's going to look like. We have a pretty good understanding of what we know is missing from the existing system and how to, you know, with all the lessons that we've learned with the existing system. So I mean, that's currently underway. And, you know, what was the question? What are we looking for out of the new system?
Yeah, you know, what's the next version of the technology? What can it do that we can't get right now?
Right. So, I mean, like, completeness first and foremost. I mean, obviously, with, you know, some of the things that Darren said earlier, we don't know, some of the bounces are really difficult. So to understand infield defense, to understand if the infielder did not receive the ball, or it didn't field the ball, I should say. We don't know exactly where they should have, like where that intersection point should be. We can interpret it, but, you know, not having complete data is one element. But, you know, other things like, you know, pose, you know, is the player sliding, diving, jumping, any of this, you know, we don't have that right now. That will be really informative as well. But also, like, think about just the mechanics of the pitcher, and the batter, swing plane, things of this nature. Like, this is all what we're looking at now. And how can we get that, and what will that do to change the game? That will be really interesting as well, to see what these things are, you know, how these measurements, what they look like in anger. It's one thing to do it in a practice facility, in a controlled environment, but when you're in front of out there in the crowd, is yelling and all of that, you know, it's a different environment. And I think we saw a lot of that with the initial, you know, from 2015 on, seeing, you know, exit velocities go up, launch angles go up, seeing this data happening in anger and then tying it to actual results was kind of transformative at scale, seeing it across the league, and you're continuing to see teams maximize that, and it's really interesting to see as the, you know, home runs go up, it has to do with the ability to see the data coming through.
Darren, what's next on Savant? What are some of the things that you want to use the technology to do, and what are some of the things that, you know, again, as a fan, that you want to see, you want to rush to get out there?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think always visualizations, like trying to visualize this data in an intuitive way. One of the things that we've really been pushing, or I've been trying to push, is like a 3D game day or something like that. You could literally watch the game in three-dimensional space. Like, say you want to view the play from Mike Trout's eyes in center field, you'd be able to, in three-dimensional space, click on him, show from his eyes where the ball goes. We have the trajectory, we have all the players, things like that, and using what he was talking about, pose, so getting limb tracking, being able to literally know where all the players' limbs are, and it would be a cohesive environment. So things like that, I think, would be really cool. But yeah, like trying to, on Savant, make these statistics visualize better too, of course.
You know, it's funny you mentioned 3D game day. Just, I'm always going to take the hit on the stuff that doesn't work. We rolled out a version of game day, I think, in 2011 that was basically a 3D viewer and allowed you to select from different camera angles. So you could look, you know, see the pitch coming in from behind home plate or behind the pitcher's mound, high first, high third, whatever. But there was a way you could manipulate that you could eventually see the play from underground. Yeah. You know, it was basically just a transparent 3D space, and if you manipulated it, you'd see the pitch flying right overhead. And that turned out to not be a really good viewing experience. But, you know, it was really the thing that heartens me about that, though, and again, I'll take the hit for the stuff that doesn't work, is the notion that sometimes we're not constrained by lack of good ideas. We have to wait for the technology to catch up.
Well, a good example of that is like augmented reality. So one of the things we've always talked about doing is if you're at the game, you hold up your phone to a player and it will augment statistics with him. It'll circle him, and it'll say, like, his sprint speed's this, X, Y, and Z. So things like that would be really cool. But the technology's, like, just not quite there yet. It will be soon. It's hard to, like, triangulate where you are at the stadium and things like that, which player you're pointing at. But we're extremely close to being able to do something like that. And I think, like, augmenting your experience at the game or at home, I don't know if anybody's seen, like, I was working on an augmented reality application where you can, like, scan the surface of this, yeah, and in three-dimensional space, it'll recreate a play. So things like that, I think, will be really exciting in the future when the technology starts to catch up.
Well, augmented reality is really interesting, and one of the key things that we're constantly trying to do is not allow any of this data or any of these visualizations to get in the way of what's happening, because obviously you want to see the play, you know, you want to see the outcome, like that's what's actually most important. The analysis comes after the fact. So AR, you know, inherently is real time, so, you know, if you're in a ballpark and you have a phone and you're like putting it up here, well, the foul ball might come right then. So you know, we're cognizant of that too, so it's you know, that's a difficult, you know, challenge to balance those two. And I think, you know, going back to one of the original questions you said, Corey, like, one of the things that I expected coming into this this project was that there would be just these things like that just fall out of the tree. Like, this is clearly going to be a great storytelling vehicle. And there were some of those. You know, Exit Velocity tells a good story, and there's a few others. Spin Rate is a pretty good one as well. Unique context, obviously, but there weren't as many as I expected, and the work that it takes to extract that information and that storytelling component, you know, especially at scale, is extremely difficult. It takes a lot of work, and much more work than I think we all expected going into this. So, you know, we've got the team in place now to maximize that, but, you know, it's still a struggle in that sense.
Yeah, and that leads to Travis. You know, how do we use machine learning and computer vision and some of those things to enhance the things we're trying to do, and sort of, you know, where can we go with that and what's next with it?
Right, so I think Greg and Darren mentioned Pose. That would be super cool. There's so many awesome applications we can do with Pose. There's a slow-mo video of Kikuchi. He's like hiding the ball as he's going through his windup. If we can start to measure things like that, that would be super cool. To your point on machine learning, there's just a number of different applications, particularly, as I mentioned, from the strategic standpoint. What are teams thinking about? What kind of numbers are they looking at? What kind of predictive models can we use to kind of, you know, use on Savant or also on the broadcast experience to kind of tell the story of the game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, sort of our first thing that we always worry about is how stuff will look on mobile devices or on the web. But again, you know, broadcast obviously is a critical part of reaching fans. And we can use, for example, we can use the StatCast data to automatically direct a game. If we know where the ball is going to be hit and where the players are going to run, and moreover, have the probability of what the outcome is going to be on the play, we can automatically direct the cameras and turn up the audio and certain microphones in different parts of the field. And this is happening a little bit right now in Premier League soccer in Europe, where they turn the microphones up and down as the ball moves around. So if the ball's kicked into one corner, they turn up the microphones in that corner and turn them down at the other end of the field so they can hear what the players are doing where the ball is. We can start to do that with broadcast. You know, if we know there's a runner on third with less than two out and a fly ball is hit to the outfield, we know it's going to be a play at the plate. So automatically the cameras can zoom in on the catcher, zoom in on the outfielder, maybe pick up cutoff men, things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, I think to take that even further, you know, we've been working with the replay operations group to have robotic cameras in the stadium to get a better angle to play at first or play at second. You know, places that are, you know, where there's a lot of replays that happen, and make sure that they have a really good camera angle for that is something that in some cases is a challenge now, because when you think about it, the best place to put a camera is where the umpire stands, because that's the best view, right? So offsetting that, having some, you know, a robotic camera there that knows where the play, knows where the ball's going, know where the players are, we've been able to do some testing on that, but that's something I think you'll see a lot more in the future. You know, also foul lines, you know, top of the foul pole, all these things, make sure you have a good shot of it is one of the key things for, you know, replay.
Yeah, here's a specific question from the audience. Can you please explain your current usage of radar and optical technology, and will this combination continue in the future?
We will be using some combination of those technologies in the future. I mean, I think that's about as far as I can take it. you know, we're looking at multiple vendors at the moment, and we're vetting them on multiple fronts. I think one of the key things that that we have in our pocket now that I always go back to is that, you know, we have a good understanding of ground truth. So regardless of what system we have, we understand how accurate is at the plate, how accurate is every component in the field. With the LiDAR scans, we understand how that affects how the environment affects the actual tracking side. So we have all these acceptance criteria, what a next generation system would look like. Another thing that we're looking at is LiDAR as well. I mean, that LiDAR is, new technology. We've done some tracking work, internally with just LiDAR scans and trying to see the players. We can see it, but the range is not very far. I think the future is very bright on that. But right now, optical and radar are really kind of the only two things that we can use to measure in baseball.
Well, and the LiDAR is really good at validating our home runs, too. So, we can create tools. We have the scan of the stadium. We know exactly how far certain points on the field are, especially the stands. So if, for whatever reason, our projection system and our tracking, our radar is off for whatever reason, we can validate that now using these LiDAR scans to say, we know that that ball went 425 feet, but our home run projection says 415. Why is that 10 feet off? What happened with the tracking, with the launch angle and the exit velocity and the algorithm that underlines that? Why is it off 10 feet? And we can start to research that, and it'll just give us better validation tools to make the data more clean and better.
Yeah, just a reminder, if you have questions, there are note cards in the back, and you can give those to Jeff. He'll bring them up. I'm just going to sort of go through the questions I have right now. Do you perceive the future use of your data to be utilized more for player development or fan engagement? We've been talking mostly about fan engagement up here on the web and on broadcast. How do you see, without – we would never give away club secrets, and clubs don't tell us all their secrets or most of them. But how do you guys envision we can use this data for player development?
No, I definitely think it's being used for player development, especially the launch angle and exit velocity stuff. I mean, I was playing hardball in a men's league, and people were out there talking about it. You can see the trickle-down effect that this has created. I don't think anybody imagined it being what it is, just how revolutionary the data set is. And so it was enlightening to me because nobody on the team probably even knew I worked for MLB. I'd just gone out, somebody asked me to play. And so and to hear people talking about exit velocity and launch angle and things like that, it's very interesting. And I think it's definitely being used at the player development level. I just think it's a transcendent technology. It's just the game is going to, it for the better, it's going to radically change it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I kind of see them, they're really kind of the same thing. I mean, what the clubs are looking at for a baseball ops perspective, much of what you get out of that is going to be a good storytelling device. So, from our perspective, at least from my perspective, we kind of balance both of them together at the same time, so it's not really that we're prioritizing baseball ops versus entertainment products. But it all comes down to accuracy and completeness. I mean, that's 100% of what this is all about. So the more complete the data set is, the better the baseball ops groups can make those intelligent decisions. And then, out of that will come entertainment products as well.
Yeah, and, Darren, this goes back to a point you made earlier, about the data that, we want to do everything all the time. We've got 100, item long list of things to work on that'll last us for years and years and years. The clubs probably come at it from that same challenge that, they get this big data set from us and what do they do with it? So I would expect, and again, the clubs aren't telling me their secrets, but every club is probably doing something a little bit different, focusing on a specific challenge that's specific to their team, whether that's roster construction, player valuation, lineup composition, defensive positioning. We see things on the field that we know clubs are using advanced data because, the players are shifting or whatever it may be. But there's probably a lot going on that we don't know about. And, it may be a little bit under the surface.
Yeah, and that's just it. Teams want the data. They just want the raw data, and they can come up with the metrics themselves. They hire a lot of very smart people to do these things, right? We don't even really know what they're doing because, they're a black box. It is interesting that, these teams are, when the system was, first developing, we're running into data quality issues, so we're fixing them, right? And some teams already have fixes in place. So there's this trickle-down effect that we don't even realize sometimes. So, we'll fix an issue with the data, and at the time, we weren't really notifying the teams. We're like, oh, well, let's make this fix, and it's a good thing, right? Well, if a team already has a fix in place, they're running that fix on top of a fix. So they're getting mad because now we're fixing the data, but they have invested resources into fixing this data. So communication has been another thing that we've had to overcome because, you know, we think we're doing the right thing and teams are off doing their own thing, so there needs to be that communication there to allow everybody to be to understand what we're doing.
Yeah, so to take that even further, so, you know, much like we hired Clay last year, we also hired Ben and built out a data quality team over the course of last year, just specifically to improve that relationship with the clubs, the communication, the changes. You know, we were just understaffed before that, and, you know, that communication was difficult, and now adding Ben and his team has been transformational for I think all of MLB at the league office side to communicate and just broadcast out everything that's happening. You know, white papers that Clay writes on, you know, ground truth. You know, it's just so they can see and understand what the results are and how that affects how that might affect things in different stadiums, how lighting affects accuracy of the system, for example. All these things kind of build up, and be able to communicate that out has been, you know, difficult in the past. Certainly, with you know my group being part of MLB Advanced Media rather than part of the you know MLB's you know as a main entity has made that also kind of an interesting relationship as well. And now that we're fully part of the of MLB, you know, kind of merged together now, you know, we're talking in one voice and communicating out with the clubs, and I think we've made a lot of improvements there.
Well, going back to the data quality thing, just reminded me of, I mean, this is just what happens when you roll out a new system, was the Diamondbacks changed their jersey colors and to that gray color. And unbeknownst to us, we didn't realize the tracking system would have a hard time looking at these new jerseys. And so what we notice is, like, why is the tracking so wrong at Diamondback Stadium? And it's only when they wear these uniforms we find out that, like, the cameras had a really hard time when the sun was out on the field to pick up the players because they had the gray jerseys on. So things like, there's just things that happen with these new systems that you just have no idea what to expect. I mean, it's a fun challenge, but, like, interesting things like that happen all the time.
I was just going to address the second part of the question, which is about the broadcast component, which is, yes, we have a lot of things that we're working on in terms of the data quality and working with the teams and kind of player development. But I know I kind of already touched on it a little bit, but I'm very excited about the development of the broadcast. I know Mike's going to be talking about it tomorrow. The StatCast broadcast was a lot of fun as a stats nerd, but I think there's definitely a lot that we can continue to do. I know new graphics packages are coming out. We don't really have to convince anyone here that StatCast is cool, but I think it can broaden the appeal of the game if we can kind of start telling you know, the story of baseball in much more compelling ways with data.
All right, here's a good question from the audience. This is all well and good, but what are you guys doing to help Chris Davis? All right, we're going to skip that one. We're not going to answer that one. I just wanted to get that in there because it was fun.
Hold on a sec. The Atlantic League's moving the mound back 2 feet. So,
yeah. Give him a little bit more time.
Maybe it'll give him a little more time.
All right, so this is actually, Travis, this is a good one for you because I think I know the answer. Do you expect to be able to measure pitcher first move to help with analysis on stolen bases?
Okay, that's a very direct question.
Yeah, I'm asking you, man. Go on.
Yeah,
thanks,
so I think.
Thanks, Mike.
No, I think we talked about pose estimation, and that's going to be a big thing that we're going to be able to do with computer vision. I mentioned we hired a computer vision engineer, so there's a lot of really cool things we're going to be able to do with that that's going to kind of enhance our tracking on things like that.
Yeah, and I think that's something we'll be able to get. I can't give you a timeline of when we'll have that, but that's something that's actively we're working on, trying to figure out how to get that. We have a way to measure that currently from the system, but it's a bit noisy at times. It was a way that we get data from just the center of mass position to kind of interpret when that first move, but it breaks down in certain cases. So getting better information on that will
happen. Well, we were actually just talking about this, too. This is a cool challenge, but like computer vision problem. So I was asking Travis, like, how can we get wind up versus stretch, and you had mentioned using computer vision.
Yeah, we were doing it. It was kind of came as a like a byproduct of something else we were working on. But like if you have the entire pose of the player, and if we have a center field camera, if we can see all of your hips and your shoulders, then you're coming from the wind up, and if you're facing obviously third base, then from the stretch. So those are the sorts of things we can't answer right now, but we're gonna, it's just gonna explode the things we can measure.
All right, here's a question I have to ask, otherwise our credibility up here would come into question. Is a robot strike zone practical? What shortcomings or obstacles would we need to overcome that first?
Good question.
If I skipped it, people would think, like, oh, these are just PR guys from baseball.
Right, so I mean, the Atlantic League is going to have automatic balls and strikes called. The system can do that right now. It's really more of a logistical issue. You always need umpires to manage the game. You need umpires call balls and strikes now, obviously, but it's really a logistics issue. Like, how do I communicate to somebody that's on the field to make that call? The tracking systems are, we understand the accuracy. We have a really good understanding of that. We understand what the strike zone is. I think one of the key things is, setting an individual strike zone for each individual is probably one of the most difficult challenges in building out the system like that. At the major league level, we do this by looking at every called ball and strike, setting the top and bottom of the strike zone through a tool that we built. But, in the minors and at other places, it's going to be, a default strike zone for the height of the batter, so the top and the bottom. That's something that's going to be, how does that actually work in reality? There might be some gaming of that as well once you kind of understand the top and bottom. That'll be really interesting. I think logistics is the key.
Yeah, and also from an operational standpoint, which is what I spend most of my time in, technology sometimes breaks. For whatever reason, it's the system isn't working or it gets damaged in some way, so you still need a human element at least as the backup, if not as a parallel operation. I don't think we could ever get to a point where we just say, that's it, there are no more physical umpires on the field anymore, because the one time the system isn't working, then what do you do?
Well, what about seasoning for the umpires? You can't just expect an umpire to just, okay, the system broke, but I haven't umpired a game in 3 months.
Yeah.
To start calling balls and strikes. I mean, good luck. These guys are throwing 100 miles an hour.
Yep. Yeah, and the point about the top and bottom of the strike zone is something that we learned as we started doing this, that obviously the inside and outside edges of the plate are fixed distances, 17 inches. But top and bottom changes from batter to batter and changes from pitch to pitch sometimes. And we found it changed over the course of the season, but not in the way we thought, that if you look at a player's rolling average over the season, their strike zone actually gets a little bit higher rather than lower. Because what we found is players fatigue, they tend to stand a little bit more upright because it's easier on the legs than crouching a little bit. So we thought the strike zone would drop as players fatigue, but in fact it rose a little bit. So that's the kind of thing that's very, very difficult to measure. Even with all of the tools we have right now, it's very, very difficult to measure that after the fact, never mind doing it live. All right, but I had to ask that one, and now we're out of trouble. All right, this is a good one for you, Darren. Is there a mobile app or one in development? Savant right now is a great web experience. What are we doing about mobile?
No, there's not currently. I'm the only developer on Savant as of right now. So hopefully if I can get some more resources, then yes, that would definitely be something that would be cool. And yes, the answer is no.
Hey, at least he's honest. At bat, not to do the cheesy sales pitch, but one of the things we've always tried to do is find ways to get more tracking data into at bat and make that a great experience. So I think that's always a challenge of working on a much smaller screen, but I think it's something that as a company we always want to do.
Well, yeah, but at bat's a unique, that is engineered for the typical fan. Savant's more engineered for the advanced fan. We struggle with what should we put in at bat for the average fan to see versus Savant, where I can put anything on there and people, the stats nerds will love it. It's a battle.
All right, here's one specific question about a metric. What data do you need to measure catch probability based on the individual player's talent level rather than comparing to all players?
Well, we have sprint speed, so it would probably be pretty tough. It would be one of those things like pop time, probably, that we would have to decide on the parameters that we think that outfielder could control, and run the algorithm, and then circle back and say, okay, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? Mm.
Travis, thoughts on that?
I would just say that we're continually looking at these metrics and trying to improve them using machine learning and different approaches. I'm trying to understand at the player level. I think right. since we are trying to benchmark at the league level, that we are trying to compare to the league level. So
I think there's also the challenge of sample size that, you know, especially for a part-time player, how many fly balls is he going to see at this specific distance and this specific hang time to build, you know, what the standards are. So if, you know, a player's only facing a couple hundred batted balls per season or fly balls per season, you know, that's the advantage that you get when you do something at league scale, is that we've got, you know, 100,000 odd batted balls over the course of the season. An individual outfielder who's not a part-time player might not see that many. So how do you develop his individual standards?
So, I mean, maybe to take that question in a little bit different direction, like, you know, catch probability only uses two elements, like how long do they have to get there and how far do they have to go. So that's why it's kind of difficult to answer it on a per-player basis. But to kind of understand a player's quality in the outfield, you need to understand a lot of things. You need to understand how fast they are. You need to understand how, you know, how fast do they accelerate, and you need to understand how well do they track the ball. You know, how good are they using their speed? You know, are they using their speed well in the beginning or at the end? Lots of different components that go into this, but the key challenge is, how do I know that guy is that fast? Like, when are they using their top speed? When are they using their max acceleration? When are they, you know, baseball's a nuanced game, as I think we all know, obviously, but there's no flag that's just saying, yep, he went max effort there. You know, that's one of the key challenges, like extracting those kind of skills from an outfield player, for example, to get really good insight to make anything specific to a player. We've got to extract all those things and really kind of get that skill. And you know, the work that Travis has done on speed tells much of that tale, but you know, that's mostly been for base running, but for outfielders, it's very difficult to determine that on all these different facets.
All right, we're getting tight on time, so we got one more question. This is going to have to be a little bit speed round, and it's for you, Travis.
Okay.
Would it be possible to add a pickoff possibility next to the stolen base StatCast section? In terms of the runner's reaction time, pitcher's arm, pitcher's, you know, release time, those sort of things?
That is actually something we're looking at currently. There is, you know, sometimes some difficulty in measuring pickoffs just because it's running, the throw is running not towards the radar. It's going in the other direction, but we are looking into that. So.
Well, one of the things I've always wanted to do, too, is, like, create, like, an application where you can go in and enter a bunch of parameters, right? Like, say, Billy Hamilton's on first. John Lester's on the mound. Hamilton's lead is 6 feet. Yadier Molina's the catcher. What is his chance of success based on all those parameters? I think that's things that we could do, and it would be really cool, and you'd be able to just run any matchup you wanted, and we'd be able to spit out the results. Or even just make it, you could remove the base runner and tell me who would, based on these parameters, who would be able to steal. I think things like that we can do and would be really cool.
And I'm glad that's what you said, and I'm going to finish with this, because that bring this whole thing full circle. That's what goes back to the Jeter backhand flip play, right? It was Shane Spencer in right field instead of Paul O'Neill. How would a different variable have produced a different outcome? And I think that really speaks to what we're trying to do, is understand not just what happened, but why it happened. So our time is up. Thank you all so much for the time.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Appreciate it.
Thank you.